Welcome to episode 13 of the Golf Betting System podcast. We're talking Maybank Championship on the European Tour and also the Waste Management Phoenix Open on the PGA Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me is our European Tour expert, Paul Williams. Evening, Paul.
Evening, Steve. How you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. He's fresh from releasing his Maybank Championship betting preview. All of our previews, predictor models and the like, anything we discuss, I put live descriptions if you're listening to this on Podbean. Of course, we've also got resident guest from a Good Talk Spoiled podcast. That's Barry O'Hanrahan. Barry, how are you?
Good evening, guys. I'm very well, thanks.
Evening to you. Right, a bit of a housekeeping as ever. golfbettingsystem.co.uk for all of the content that we're going to discuss tonight. We're recording this, as ever, tea time on Monday over in the UK. Twitter, I'm available at Bamford Golf. Paul Williams is available at Golf Betting, and Barry is available at A Good Talk Golf. Now, I'd like to thank listeners before we move on. We had an epic number of listeners last week, a real considerable jump week on week. So thank you to each and every one of you. I hope you're enjoying the podcasts. The numbers are going up, so that's very pleasing for all of us. Also, a quick note just to say, if you're listening to this on iTunes, you want to leave a review, that would be much appreciated by us as well. Get some review numbers on our iTunes listing. Now, before we move on to discuss the Maybank and also the Phoenix Open, I just wanted to have a quick catch-up with the guys in terms of what did we learn at the weekend across the two golf tournaments. So I'll start with Paul. What do you think we learned in Dubai and also at Torrey Pines? Anything that jumps to mind for you?
What did we learn? We learned that golf betting can be incredibly frustrating, as you and I have experienced for a number of years. And going back to Dubai to begin with, Hao Tong Lee, fantastic performance from Hao Tong Lee. Really impressive young man. I tipped him up the week before, 100-1. And missed the cut. Now, it transpires that he picked up a bug, and when he got to the tee on Thursday, he was feeling a bit rough in Abu Dhabi, and promptly went and had two poor rounds and missed the cut. And then, of course, everyone leaves him alone the week after, and he produces 30 birdies and takes down Rory McIlroy in Dubai with a fantastic performance, it must be said. I mean, that's one thing, I guess. And then, my one remaining hope was Andy Sullivan, who's sitting in an each-way position, going up the final hole. Nice reachable par 5. Doesn't even need to reach it. You can just take it easy and meander up there and get a par. But no, of course, he gets a bogey and falls into an 87-way tie for sixth place. A little frustrating. Premature tipulation, I'm told, on Twitter. Picking these players and then they go and win the week after.
I remember you mentioning it last week, the fact that Dubai track can get quite linksy and you get a lot of links-type players congregate or moving towards the top of the leaderboard, especially when it's a little bit blowy around there. And it's interesting with Lee, clearly he finished like an absolute train at the Open last year. And I also remember him last year in that event at Sicily where it was blowing an absolute gale and Kyrgios won at 350-1.
Yeah, absolutely. You can go back all the way through the records and of the Dubai Desert Classic, and there are an awful lot of correlating players with links tracks, and yeah, it's certainly worth keeping an eye on every year that comes around. And of course, now Lee's won Dubai, so as we said last week, he must go on and win the Masters now, I guess.
His putting numbers, Barry, were absolutely out of this world when I checked this morning. He putted at sub 1.5 putts per green in regulation, which is you very, very, very rarely see that on a main tour event. He absolutely putted the lights out, and that's why he beat Rory effectively. He just had. Did I see something about he didn't miss one within 10 feet or something?
Yeah, I saw that yesterday.
It's really good going, isn't it? And to make 30 birdies on the way around there as well. And, it, you know, under the intense pressure of playing up against a four-time major champion, former world number one, and to produce that kind of performance was good. Well, more than good, it was fantastic. Going back to the Masters, obviously we talked last week about the winner of Dubai for the last 2 years has gone on to win the Masters. And before the start, Lee was 200-1 to win at Augusta in April, and he's already been backed into 80s. So clearly there are a few people there with their eye on that particular trend, just trying to see if that follows through for a third year on the trot.
He's played at Augusta, has he? Didn't he play there as an amateur?
Quite possibly.
I think he's been there. Something's telling me in my mind. I don't think he's going there as a course rookie. Interesting. Clearly, I think the bookmakers were just absolutely praying that Rory didn't win. So they got their way there, the bookmakers. Anything? Did you learn anything, Barry? Did you take in any of the golf over the weekend? Were there any trends or things that you weren't expecting or you were expecting that you witnessed?
I thought Rory would cruise it from, you know, once he posted his his second round and then the third round even. I really thought he'd go on and cruise it. And looking at him, a couple of quotes from him today, he says like he's really, you know, pissed off, and I'm sure there were a few more choice words to that effect as well. You know, he's talking about being annoyed about it, but at the same time, I think it's like Lee's putting is the thing that's probably causing Rory to question himself. I didn't see it live yesterday. I was lucky enough to be out on the golf course on a dry day in Ireland in January, so some of my friends were commenting that, you know, Rory was trying his best to throw it away, but, you know, when somebody's draining every single putt they're making, you know, they're looking at it or effectively doing that, it really gets in your head, and it forces you into mistakes. It's like playing him a match play, and, you know, when somebody's playing better than expectation, it eventually wears you down. So that could be the thing that's kind of causing Rory to question, you know, choices he made and things that happened yesterday. And sometimes things just happen against you, like there's destiny on the course, and it just wasn't for him. At the end, he got philosophical and said, look, if somebody'd offered me a third and a second for my first two events back, I'd have been all over it and bitten their hand off for it, so or words to that effect. So I think it's a phenomenal return to fitness and to golf for Rory after a fairly sizable chunk of time off. And yeah, I think it's a great start to the year and a great kind of beginning to his build up to the Masters as well, which is, I mean, for sure his number one priority this year.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, Barry. The fact that he's come out after such a long layoff and he's produced those two efforts. And yes, he's not won, and yes, he could have won either or both of those events. But he should be very pleased with the way he's playing, with the state of his game, the state of his long game in particular. And I think it's going to be a good year for golf full stop, given the players that we've got coming back into form. And Jason Day won again today, so, you know, you've got another player who's another elite player who's potentially finding some form as we head into 2018 and towards the Ryder Cup. So we should watch this season with interest.
It's as we've always said, isn't it? You know, with Rory, he's just getting up to speed. I think the two performances, considering the length of the time off, were amazing personally. But he set such high standards, and we expect such high standards from him. And what will happen is his clearly his approach play is better than it was when he was struggling with the back. And the putter will just start to warm more and more, and he'll walk a tournament at some point. You just see that happening. It's interesting, he's playing Pebble Beach in a couple of weeks, which he's never played before, so that's going to be interesting to see. That's a very good field this year, actually. Spieth's playing, Day's playing, Rory's playing. There's a very strong top line to it, so that'll be interesting to watch at Pebble Beach. What did I learn? I keep asking the question, I haven't thought of an answer myself. I'll tell you what I learned. Mark Leishman is flaky.
It's only now you're realising that.
Yeah, I know. I did think this, you know, he doesn't win enough, Steve. It wasn't even that. It's like, you know, he's just birdied the 17th, which no one had birdied all day. And you're thinking, oh, he's in a tie for sixth. He actually birdies the last. He's going to get a full place here. And I just knew in the back of my mind that and I was watching it on obviously clearly on Sky, and all of a sudden they went alphabetical on the names, and I'm not really wanting to look at the bottom. And it said Leishman minus six, tie for ninth. And I shouted a rather large expletive that I hope the neighbour didn't hear. But yes, the other thing we did note from Torrey Pines was, you know, I was harking on about South North. All three in the playoff did the South North rotor again. So Norrin, Day and Ryan Palmer all played the South first, and then they played the North course on the Friday. And if my rudimental mathematics work, I think it's now 9 from the North and 19 from the South in terms of those that have finished in the top three since Ben Crane won in 2010. That's a pretty big trend, and it continues year after year after year. So something to note potentially for listeners in 12 months' time. The other thing I think we noted this week was John Rahm, the Bamford kiss of death. Really, you know, it came. I saw him as short as I think I saw him as short as 9 or 7 to 4 on Saturday morning to win that tournament. And then he started, didn't he start with I think it was a par and then a birdie, and you think, oh, this is a good start for Saturday. It's just, and then bogey, bogey, bogey. And then it just, the wheels completely fell off, didn't they? I mean, he's clearly a human being. That's the first time I looked today that John's ever got into a seriously strong contending position and just fallen away completely.
It's a good learning experience, though. You know, picking up valuable lessons.
It's a lot to ask, isn't it?
It is. I mean, to have a chance to go to number one and do it in the first tournaments that you actually have a chance to do it, and putting that in the shoulders and head of a 23-year-old.
I think that course played a little bit firmer this year. You could tell from the scoring as well. It was 13 under one last year, 10 under this year, and they were going backwards in that breeze. That course was playing firm and fast at the end. And I think someone like John Rahm, who's still learning his craft, I think put him on a soft golf course, you know, and we're having a proper shootout, aren't we, with Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy. We know all the soft course experts. John Rahm's just as strong as those guys. But put him on a technical test on a classical golf course that's playing firm and fast, and even the very best start to unravel, you know, the inexperienced guys. And you noticed last night as well on the PGA Tour, all of the guys that were contending at the end, they were all experienced PGA Tour pros.
Yeah, and it was actually fascinating viewing, watching the four of them chop and change the top. You know, once they got to, was the 13th or the 14th, was the first of the really difficult ones. Yeah. It was just fascinating watching all of them have to grind through those holes. I mean, that's not entertaining for 72 holes, but for that part of the golf tournament, it was really compelling viewing and you know, thoroughly enjoyable. A good win by Jason Day this morning. Kind of a shame they just couldn't keep going last night. It's for both of them, you know, Day and Norrin. You know, you've all the adrenaline pumping, and then you have to get yourself up again this morning. And you know, Norrin was, I'd say, 2 yards from absolute perfection with his 3-wood approach this morning, and just cruelly rolled back into the water. And then, you know, Jason Day put a beautiful shot in to seal the tournament, really.
Yeah, don't forget though, don't forget though, lads, the Ryder Cup's going to be a walkover for the Americans. You can see that, can't you? Just, you know, with the lack of depth we're going to have in the European team playing on European home soil.
Yeah, and just in case nobody realised, Alex Norrin is a 9-time European Tour winner, and you should know his name, but even though you don't. The American commentary is hilarious about him now, and I hope he pops a head up and grabs a PGA Tour win very soon.
Paul's always said to me, not the best on Bermuda grass, but if you throw it, and it's true, just look at his results. Pure bent grass, anything with some poa in it, and on a classical golf course, Norrin, he can do some serious damage. Yeah, Paul.
Absolutely. And a lot of these players who come over from Europe and tee it up in America, they're overpriced because the Americans or the bookmakers don't expect them to be able to contend in those situations. But as you saw with Noren, you know, he could easily have won that. As Barry said, he was so close to making that approach shot, and of course that made Jason Day's you know, he had to lay up anyway, his layup and his wedge shot in that much easier.
Did well at Wells Fargo last year. That was pure bent grass, that tournament they played at Eagle Point. He was contending in that, and he wasn't even a tour member at that point. So yeah. And I've read that he's now set up in the States, so he's going to be playing PGA Tour pretty much full time. So he's going to be one to watch.
It'll be interesting to see how Tommy Fleetwood fares when he comes over, because he's spending a few weeks over on the PGA Tour in the reasonably near future as well.
Yeah, starts at Riviera, yeah.
Absolutely. And it's another one that I suspect to start with, the price will be disproportionately high. And, you know, this is a guy who's, you know, he's getting close to the top 10 in the world. He can contend and compete in those kind of, particularly at Riviera. Riviera should suit him down to the ground. So, yeah, watch his progress over in the States with interest too.
Right, let's move forward to this week. Maybank Championship. If I'm reading this correctly, it's the third renewal of this tournament, isn't it? And it's not to be confused with the Malaysian Open, as was.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk us through some headlines in terms of the course and what we're looking for this week, Paul?
Yeah, you're right. It's the third Maybank Championship. The first one was on a separate track, so if you're looking at the 2016 event, which was won by Marcus Fraser, then take the result there with a pinch of salt. Last year, they moved to the Saujana Golf and Country Club in Kuala Lumpur, which is where we are this week. Which is a 7,186 yard par 72, tree lined. It's called the Palm Course, but its nickname is the Cobra. But with a winning score last year of 19 under from Fabrizio Zanotti, it doesn't appear to have that much bite, to be honest, to be called the Cobra.
I've seen you with a few Cobras, Paul. You're dangerous after a Cobra or three.
Yeah, or one or two. So, from 12 months ago, Zanotti won 19 under. He was 225-1 last year. Tasty price if you could have picked him out. He'd missed all of his cuts for that calendar year to date until he came here and got the job done with a 63 on the Sunday. The previous year on that separate course, as we said, was Marcus Fraser. Again, he was 175-1. He had no tangible incoming form, and he got the job done there as well. So you know, there's an argument to go for some longer prices right from the outset if that's the way you like to approach your golf betting. Kuala Lumpur, this time of year, it's hot. There's a lot of thunderstorms. This track, as they all tend to be over in this part of the world, is going to be soft. It's not overly long, but they tend to play receptive, soft, low scoring. The week we're looking at here, there's going to be rain. There's rain at the moment each day up until Saturday, potentially.
So target golf, yeah?
Yeah, it's going to be target golf. There's water on seven of the holes, something like that. There's tree line, but it generally is quite easy. It's quite wide. Soft fairways will make the fairways play wider as it is. So yeah, it's going to be more about target golf, risk reward. You know, the kind of appealing to those players who are happy to take shots on and can fly it through the air and, you know, land the ball next to the pin and make the putt. Bermuda grass greens, as you'd expect over in that part of the world. It's going to appeal to a certain type of player, I think. If you go back through the history, when it's played tougher, greens in regulation has been the key stat. When it's played easier, and there's going to be no wind this week, 3-5 miles an hour, it's going to be dead calm, really. It's going to be more about putting. Who can hit greens? Not particularly big greens here, but who can hit the greens? And then, most importantly, who can make the putts on the Bermuda putting surfaces here? So, I went around the houses with this to try and work out where to go with it, because if you look at the incoming form of Zanotti, there was nothing there. They did play this course on the Malaysian Open going back to 2009, won by Anthony Kang. Peter Hedblom won here in 2007, and Tongchai JD won twice in 2005 and 2004. And JD was only the only one out of those really with a great deal of form coming into this. Kang had finished fourth three events before, but that was about it. Hedblom had absolutely nothing. So if you're looking at current form, it could be an important factor, might be a complete red herring. In terms of course form, Zanotti was on his debut, Hedblom was on his debut here. Kang had played it around five times and finished no better than 41st. But then you've got Jaidi, who'd finished seventh when he won it the first time, and he retained the title here the year after. So you've got a real mix of stats there, some suggesting course form and current form are good, some suggesting that they're absolutely irrelevant. So
when Zanotti and Fraser won, did they actually beat some players that were towards the top of the market, or was it a complete and utter free-for-all from an odds perspective?
Last year, and the year before, going back to Fraser, it was less. There were less big players up there. Last year, Danny Willett led going into the final round. He had a three-shot lead, actually, and you'd have expected him to convert that. But I think Zanotti was three or four groups back going out, and he produced a 63, and he's more of a ball striker than a putter in my mind, Zanotti, but he clearly got the flat stick going that day, and he finished with an eagle on the 72nd hole, and no one could catch him. David Lipsky was the closest to him at the end, but he needed to birdie the final hole to force a playoff and couldn't manage that. So Zanotti, with the pressure off effectively, because he'd gone out, he knew he needed to shoot a score and get himself in the clubhouse, and he did exactly that, and no one could get close to him. So that's clearly a way to get the job done on this particular track. It can be a low. It's going to be a low scoring event this year. It is a low scoring track when people get the putter going. Going back to last year, Bernd Wiesberger, he made 9 birdies on the trot at one point during the second round, I think it was, which would have been a European Tour record if they weren't playing the preferred lies at the time. But in any track, when you're going out and making 9 consecutive birdies, you know that it's set up to score and to score very, very well. So for me, that kind of leads me down the kind of player that I want. I want someone who's aggressive. I want someone who's long enough to take this track on. I want someone who's going to take the par fives on. Someone who can get streaky with the putter. And someone who's making a lot of birdies and can make a lot of birdies. So again, as I say, I kind of went around the houses with it. I've ended up with 3 picks, and the first two, they're not going to be particularly innovative because I think they're wholly logical. The first one's Alex Levy, who's been playing great golf for the last couple of weeks. He played well at the Eurasia Cup actually, and then he's followed that up with a couple of top seven finishes, 7th in Abu Dhabi, 4th last week in Dubai, and both of those are really big personal bests for him. He's not coming anywhere near those kind of performances on those two tracks before, so he's clearly playing well. His greens and regulations very strong, and that's a real important factor with Lever. You need to see if he's hitting a lot of greens, because when he is, then he's going to be dangerous, because he can get the putt going, he can make birdies. So he's hitting virtually 80% there or thereabouts greens and regulation last couple of events. And if you look at his history, when he's won, it's typically been on these soft, risk reward target golf kind of tracks. Going back when he won in Portugal, it was rain affected. It got reduced down to two rounds in the end. But he was something like 19 under through those two rounds, because he just went out there and absolutely attacked the pins from day one. He did something similar in Germany. It was a 3-round affair. Again, it was weather affected. It was sopping wet, and he's going out there and he's just making birdie after birdie after birdie. So I'm not proposing this one gets reduced, because I don't think the weather forecast is bad as that. I'd imagine they'll get 4 rounds in. But it's going to play soft. It's going to be receptive. He's playing good golf. He's hitting a lot of greens. I think he's going to go out there and play well.
He's got... we've been discussing this. I'll bring Barry in on this point. If you look at Levy recently, he's become a lot more consistent. He's hitting tons more greens in regulation. He's playing well on courses that you wouldn't expect him to play well on. If he continues this run of great form and he continues it, you know, well into the season, Barry, you could actually see him making a real challenge for the European team this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of pleasantly surprising seeing him perform across a wider variety of courses rather than being a kind of a flat track bully, which he had been until now. But he's a really exciting player to watch. He's got a good personality on him as well. Makes him a very likable guy. Plays aggressive golf, which, you know, I think the fans like to see, and I particularly enjoy watching him play golf. So if he makes the Ryder Cup team, I think that would be a great thing, because it would get certainly get the French crowds a bit more involved.
Absolutely.
Not a massive golf nation, but if they have, we all know the French, if they have a hometown guy to support, they'll really get involved in it. And I think that would kind of add to the atmosphere of the Ryder Cup, make it a little bit more special there in Paris. So I'd be chuffed to have Alexander Levy playing good golf on our Ryder Cup team.
We've seen it in the past, haven't we? I can remember Gallagher when they played it at Glen Eagles. He got in, didn't he? And that was like the best season that Stephen Gallagher had ever had on the European Tour, and he snuck into the team. And then you can go back to people like Boo Weekly when it was in Kentucky, and all this kind of stuff in terms of. It was Kenny Perry, actually, in Kentucky, wasn't it? Kenny Perry got on the team. That was the year that he refused to come over for the Open because he wanted to concentrate on getting as many PGA Tour points as possible, and he thought he'd maximise his chances by staying at home. So you do see this quite often, where a local player all of a sudden finds a completely new level of golf. And Paul, I must say, I shouldn't really say this, Paul, but I'll tell listeners that you've always seem to have a very good read on Levy. I know the price isn't brilliant, but sometimes the obvious just stares you in the face.
I unless he'd come in at some, you know, kind of 6-1, 8-1, I wouldn't have seen any other way to not back him this week, because, as you say, I kind of follow him quite extensively in terms of how he's playing and what kind of courses I think are going to suit. And this is the perfect storm, in my view. The conditions set up perfectly for him. He's playing very, very well. And make no mistake, he desperately wants to get onto that Ryder Cup team. He desperately wants to get on there. He's up to 60th in the world. He knows that he only needs another 10 spots in the short term to start getting him access to the kind of events that he needs to be playing, yeah, so that he can get a decent run on that.
WGCs and the Masters, yeah.
Absolutely. Whether the Golf National suits him or not, it's a different matter. But, you know, as Barry said, having a local guy playing there is going to enthuse the French crowds without any shadow of a doubt. And he'd be a fantastic addition to the team in terms of morale. I think he's a cracking golfer, and as you said, he's a very amiable kind of guy. So. But yeah, going back to this week, 16-1. I've got him for earlier on today, and I've gone 2.5 points each way, so I've gone quite heavy on him because I think that's worthy of investing in. And you've got Stenson ahead of him in the betting, but I wouldn't be remotely surprised to see him win this week.
Take us through your longer price, because I had in my mind before I saw your preview, I had two players in my mind that I knew you would tip up. Right, one being the canny Frenchman, and this other individual that you've tipped up, I just knew that you'd be tipping him.
Okay,
take us through.
I'll give you the other one very quickly, because I'm back in Hao Tong Li, who won last week as well. He's 20-1. If we go into a birdie fest again, potentially the guy who made 30 birdies last week, he's gone back to back twice in his career in the past. I see no reason why he can't carry that on. He's a young, hungry guy who wants to do well. So I've gone 2.5 each way at 20-1 on Hao Tong Li as well. To your point, yeah, the third and final, obviously two big investments up top. So I've gone for Scott Hend, and Hend's that kind of player who you put him on a course that is there to be attacked, and he can take it to pieces. Now, it doesn't mean that he's a one-trick pony in that respect, because he has performed well. He's won at Fanling for the Hong Kong Open. He's finished runner-up at the at Crans at the European Masters for the last 2 years on the trot.
So
he can perform on these kind of shorter, quirkier tracks. But generally, the way he gets around that is he just takes his aggressive game to it, bangs it as far as he can, and then he's got wedges in from the rough or wherever he lands into these small greens. And it's a similar kind of setup here, because they are relatively small greens. But he's going to be able to take on shots, as long as he's not hitting it in the water every shot, he's going to be able to leave himself a wedge or a short iron into the greens. And when he gets on these Bermuda grass putting surfaces, that's absolutely where he thrives. So I was pleasantly surprised to see him at 80-1, because he has shown some form the last couple of weeks.
I was going to say, he's bubbling, isn't he? 37th last week in Dubai, 22nd, finished with a 69-69 at Abu Dhabi, which is something you wouldn't really think's up Scott's alley. And another interesting one, I do remember this from the end of last year, he was second and then sixth after 36 holes on the Earth course, the DP World Tour Championship.
Yep.
And you've always said to me, follow him on Bermuda.
Yep.
Bermuda.
He is playing well. The actual headline results aren't particularly saying that, but if you dig into it, he was second for greens in regulation at Abu Dhabi, which, again, when he's playing well, that's exactly the kind of numbers you expect to get out of him. And he was seventh for putting last week in Dubai, so just over 1.6 putts per greens in regulation. So, you know, you tie that together, decent greens in regulation, decent putting, he's going to have a good week. So where did he come last year? 29th last year when he played this course, and he shot a 74 and a 75 in that, and a 66 and a 67. So clearly he can play the course. He turns three of those rounds into 66s, 67s, he's going to be in the mix. So, 80-1 I thought was a price worth taking on.
Any thoughts, Barry, on one of these typical Asian birdie fests, you know, on a really soft golf course? Anyone jumping out at you at a bigger price?
A couple just did. David Horsey came out of the blocks. I'm not going to actually put in a horse pun right now. He took off very quickly. I can't help it.
Quick out of the stalls, yeah.
I really can't help it. I'm sorry, guys. Sorry, everyone. Took off very quickly last week with what was it, 63, I think it was.
Yeah.
So the guy can clearly score, and he's available at 90-1 on Bet365. I'm seeing right now. There's not too many markets up, but he is there.
He finished second here a long time ago, actually, Horsey. Going back to when it was on the Malaysian Open. So he's got a bit of form around this track as well.
That certainly helps my case. So that's one, and the other one I just kind of from scanning through the combined stats sheet on the site was Sam Brazel, who has gone 30 seconds.
Yeah, he won in Hong Kong a couple of years ago, completely out of the blue, didn't he? Was it last year before last? Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So he's had last two tournaments are 32nd and 22nd, and he finished 12th here last year. So when those are all combined, along with his odds of 140-1, that means the money's coming out of my wallet and going on him. So those are my two for the week.
I do like Horsey, actually. Because, you know, again, a relatively short course. He's a real tactical technician, isn't he? And he can just pick a golf course apart and score really, really heavy.
He can do. My reservation this week is that it is going to play relatively long, even though it's only 7-2, because it's going to be so soft. So there will be some of the par fives that he's not going to be able to attack, because he's not going to be able to get it far enough up the fairway, in my view. But yes, if he gets the putter going, which we know he can get himself in the mix. The danger with Horsey is that when push comes to shove at the business end of the actual event, does he convert? Or does he do an Andy Sullivan and drop away right at the end, or a Mark Leishman?
Oh, that's mean. Just because Andy burned you last week. Anyway, I'm happy to take the punt at 90-1 and see what he can do.
Yeah. That's what you get for 90-1. It's interesting with Lee, isn't it? Already in his young career, he's gone back to back twice.
Yeah, going back to 2014. So what would he have been then? He'd have been 18 years of age. So he was playing on the the One Asia Tour and the PGA China Tour. So they, you know, they're small events, but even so, to have the experience that you can go out and win an event and keep that form going for another week and do that. One of them was personal back to back, so there was a week off in between. The other one was literally week after week winning two on the trot. So yes, he can maintain his form, and yeah, I'll be interested, very interested to see how he plays this week.
Should we talk Waste Management Phoenix Open? It's always catchy, that one, isn't it? I always like this tournament, simply because of the atmosphere. You know, 600,000 beard in the main spectators causing an absolute riot, especially on the Saturday. And then, of course, it's Super Bowl Sunday. It's the kind of tournament I also like because it can be very, very predictable in terms of the skill sets that we're looking for. So don't forget, played at altitude, it's a 7,200-yard par 71. So it's at altitude and it's 7-2. So straight away you're thinking, well, it can be overpowered to a certain extent. The greens here are a bit... It's a Tom Weisskopf design, which the North course last week at Torrey Pines was as well. But it's a weird course because the greens themselves are Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. But because it's clearly winter, and even in Phoenix it gets quite cold, especially overnight and in the mornings, they overseed the greens. They overseed them with a mix, which includes velvet bent grass. And if you look at the winners here, Hideki Matsuyama, we also, of course, had Brooks Koepka, and we've had the likes of Baby Walrus won the year before that in 2014, Mickelson. The greens have changed of late, and they tend to suggest to me that they actually play more like bent grass than they do Bermuda grass, just by looking at the names at the top of the leaderboards. We know that Koepka's won on bent grass. He won the US Open on bent grass. We know that Hideki is far more comfortable on bent grass greens than he is on Bermuda grass. So to me, it suggests that they play far more like bent than they do Bermuda. For me, I don't know, you can almost call it like the cathedral of ball striking, because when you look at this, the numbers are pretty incredible in terms of the skill set that's needed. Effectively, you've just got to hit as many greens as humanly possible. It isn't a putting contest of any shape or form. So you're really looking for players this week who can hit the ball a long way, who can hit the ball high, who can hit the prerequisite amount of greens in regulation, and also a very, very aggressive across par fives and also drivable par fours. Because as we remember, and I'm sure Paul and Barry both remember this, a couple of years ago when Ricky Fowler was two ahead on the 71st hole, the drivable par four, and he hit it in the water using driver. It's one of those courses that you can almost be over-aggressive on it. So, you know, it isn't complete and utter 100% throttle, hitting it as far and as long as you can. There are certain nuances and tactics that need to be played around here to get the job done, if you see what I mean. Are they your thoughts about it, Barry, in terms of TPC Scottsdale and the way it plays?
I have less knowledge about it than you, but yeah, it certainly feels like guys could grab, you know, from the human aspect, guys can grab one or two shots on a round even by just getting a buzz off the crowd and enjoying the atmosphere. You know, yeah, loosens them up and might give them just that little bit more aggression where needed, and you know, hopefully the caddy can hold them back when it's not needed. So it seems to me that guys that enjoy and embrace the atmosphere there tend to perform very well in it. I'll just give a couple of my mid-range picks quickly, and then we'll bounce back to you for the main stuff, Steve. I think I'm going to follow Ben Ahn. He's at 50-1. Finished sixth last week, and yes, in good form, solid golfer.
He led this for a lot of last year, didn't he? Before Hideki kind of caught him up and swallowed him eventually.
Yeah, hungry Hideki, going for three in a row. And
That's never been done since Steve Stricker, by the way. I think that was that I think it was 09, 10 and 11 at the JDC.
Yeah, but so last week we thought the North South thing might flip around, so you never know, it might just stick to it.
Yeah.
And the other one who went pretty well last week was Harris English. He's a bit of a green and red monster to my eye anyway, so those are my two, 50-1 and 55-1.
Hits it a long way, Harris, doesn't he?
Yeah, if I come up with any super long shots, I mean, somebody else that might interest me is Ryan Palmer, playing very well. And he's at 70-1.
Seems to be a bit of juice in Palmer, that price. I think people genuinely underestimate him, because clearly he hasn't won since 2010.
That's a problem. But, you know, that's if you can get nice each way, you know, a quarter of the odds each way, you know, there's a very good chance he could just go and do it again this week, or he might go and get over the line and hit a better wedge shot when needed.
I know there's a player that Paul's very, very interested in. He's sitting just above Ryan Palmer on Odds Checker, and that is Charlie the Hoffmeister Hoffman. I know you've had him earmarked this for a long time, haven't you, Paul? Charlie, I'm sure you have.
Well, yeah, I'll probably be looking primarily. Well, I want to see his tee time first, but I'll be having a look at Charlie and his for the first round leader market, because he's that kind of player who can get off to a very fast start. And for me, this is the kind of track that you do need to go out and attack. And you talked about it, if you've got you're a good ball striker, but also you want to be aggressive on those scoreable fours and fives, then you can put together a pretty competitive score. And he's that kind of player, Hoffman, who can get out of the blocks very quickly. So once all the market's fully formed, that's a bet that I'll be looking for, if he's got himself a decent tee time, that's for sure.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just quickly run through the form of players that have won this. Right, okay. So going back to Hunter Mahan, 64th at Pebble the week before. Mark Wilson miscut. Kyle Stanley breaks the trend completely, because he finished second at Torrey, the famous Branch Snedeker victory where he threw it away. Then he went the week after to Scottsdale and got his first major in PGA Tour, Kyle Stanley. So it can and does happen. But then Phil Mickelson, 51st. Kevin Stadler was 78th. Brooks Koepka was 19th. Hideki Matsuyama missed cut at Torrey Pines, and he was 33rd at Torrey Pines last year. So it doesn't shout in your face result from that. Now, you do get players like Ryan Palmer that have done well at in the tournament previous, come here and done very well. JB Holmes is another one that can link good performances together out on the West Coast, so I wouldn't be surprised to see JB involved again this week, because clearly on a course where total driving and being able to hit it a mile does have an advantage, you can see the likes of Holmes, you can see the likes of a Scott Piercy, the likes of a Ben Ann, guys that are particularly aggressive off the tee and can hit an amount of fairways, you can see them being a factor this week. You know, at the end of the day, Brooks Koepka won here on course debut a few years ago. So, you know, that aggressive, that real aggressive ball striker who can hit lots of greens, not that I'm saying JB can do that, but you don't have to do that to get in the mix and get an each-way payout around here. But eventually, the winner seems to be the guy that can hit it 77, 80, 82 point, or 83% in terms of greens in regulation. Very high greens in regulation around here. I haven't actually selected my tips. My preview is going to be out in the morning. Jason Day, the playoff going over into today, meant all of the PGA Tour stats didn't update, so the odds are up slowly and the stats have only just become available. But, you know, the players that I do look at, it's interesting looking at the top five in the market. We've got, of course, Jordan Spieth. We've got Hideki going for his three-peat. We've got Jon Rahm, Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler. You know, five of the very best players in the world. And you've got someone like Coral that have pretty much gone level price on all five of them. And then you've got someone like Bet365 going nines on Spieth and Matsuyama, 10 on Rahm, and then out to 16s for Thomas and Fowler. So, you know, there's even the bookmakers are having quite a big variance opinion already on this. So I think it's going to be an interesting tournament. I would not be surprised to see an elite level winner. And my tips are coming out tomorrow, my tip preview. So it's going to be always one of my favourite tournaments, this one. So for me, look for ball strikers and look for guys that can hit the ball a particularly long way. I just think they're ultimately that's the kind of player that will get the job done over someone like a Webb Simpson, who just can't quite have the length to do enough damage to actually get the victory. Right then, gents, thanks very much for your time. Very enjoyable as ever. Thanks to listeners, and we will see you all again next week. Thanks for listening. Cheers. Goodbye.